Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Moncrief on News Talk.
It is time for parenting. Joanna Fortune joins us once again. Good afternoon, Joanna.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Our 4-year-old son is quite difficult. He acts out a lot and causes scenes in public. My wife and I have taken the gentle parenting approach with parenting, but to be honest, we're starting to question our decision. When either of his grandparents mind him, he's as good as gold. He listens to them and goes to bed at a reasonable time. Don't get me wrong, his grandparents spoil him, but they seem to have a firm hand with him. For example, if he throws a scene in public, my father will very sternly shout at him and tell him to cop himself on. The tone is slightly aggressive, but he doesn't put a foot out of line with him. Likewise, my mother-in-law is very strict and has used the wooden spoon on him once or twice, small tap, when he wouldn't stay in bed. Since then, he goes to bed at 8 p.m. and will stay down for the night. My wife and I could only dream of such a night. He's usually running riot around our house until 10 p.m. And then even at that, he's up and down during the night. He usually ends up sleeping in our bed. Neither me or my wife is advocating for corporal punishment, but I'm wondering how we can be stricter on our child and get the same level of respect. We do time out, which he will do without protest, but the tantrums and manic bedtime routine continues.
I mean, Sean,
whoa.
First of all, you know, him doing as he's told in response to being shouted at or tapped with a wooden spoon, I wouldn't confuse compliance with calm.
Yeah.
Just to be clear about that. And I do think there is a middle ground between the wooden spoon and running riot at 10 p.m. as a 4-year-old. Like, there genuinely is a middle ground. The biggest issue here is this idea that you're practicing gentle parenting. I think gentle parenting has caused so much confusing as a concept. And the reason being, it's not new. Like, it's actually been around forever. Things get rebranded and marketed and they feel very new. The concept behind it is about connection, empathy, and respect. But it is not permissive parenting.
Yeah.
Fundamental aspect of gentle parenting being successful is that there are boundaries, and those boundaries are they're calm, but they are clear and they are consistent. So it's more of a gentle yet firm approach rather than, oh, please stop doing that, darling. You know, and any 4-year-old's going, I don't even hear you in that. So this 4-year-old is receiving, it sounds like the grandparents are, you're lucky in lots of ways, they're actively involved in his care, and that's great. And he clearly, they have a good relationship. Do I agree with the yelling at a 4-year-old to cop himself on or the wooden spoon? No, I'm not going to endorse that, but I'm also looking at that through a generational lens as well. What I'm thinking for a 4-year-old is he's getting very different messages from his caregivers.
Yeah.
And if you're 4 years old, that's very, very confusing. There really is a middle ground for everybody, by the way, to come into. A 4-year-old getting out of bed is not something that needs punishing. A 4-year-old getting into bed is very, very common. And it's often because it's, you know, I'm still buzzing with lots of energy and I've decided now is the time that I have 50 stories I need to tell you and I just want to keep you close to me. And they have all kinds of strategies to achieve that. So I would, this whole, you know, this timeout thing for a 4-year-old, absolute waste of time.
I mean,
like, I don't know what that's achieving, but very little. Even if he does it without protest, maybe he just quite likes sitting there, but he's not reflecting on his behavior. He's not meaning making, and he's not using that to integrate and move forward with fresh thinking. Don't kid yourself on that. That's not happening. So if it's a timeout, maybe it's parents who need it more than the child. He needs redirection and distraction. He needs a gentle yet firm coming down to his eye level, holding his hands, don't leave the hands free, coming down to the eye level of an overactive 4-year-old, because you'll get hit. But he needs to hear, no, stop, we don't do that. In a serious voice that isn't yelling, isn't shouting, but is very serious. So you change your tone and you change your facial expression to match the tone that you're using, which conveys the message. And then you redirect him, distract him into something else, get him going on it and move on. But boundaries are the biggest issue here. And it's the consistency, though, because at home, boundaries are definitely needed at home. And it will help him feel safe. It will help him feel that you're predictable and that he knows, you know, when I say he knows who's in charge, you should never have to say, I'm in charge.
Yes.
You do it rather than say it. But it will give him a sense of internalized safety. He can anticipate with certainty how you'll react. He can be right about that. And he can therefore be co-regulated by his parents, which means they're setting the emotional tone for him to match. Because at the moment, he's setting the emotional tone for them to chase after.
Mm. Is it it's a job of work, though, to put the genie back in the bottle, mm-hmm. really, given that he associates his own home with, woohoo!
Yeah, it is, absolutely. And he's not going to high-five them and go, you know, finally, boundaries. Yeah. You know, but what you do have to do with the consistency isn't just for children, it's also for us, you know, is that this could take a couple of weeks of, You feel like you're battling and, you know, it's taking ages to get him to bed. But you have to form a new habit, a new routine so that he can, it doesn't roll. I'm not allowed to do that, actually. 4 years old running around at 10 o'clock, he's not getting enough sleep, first of all. You know, he sounds tired but wired, if I'm honest with you. Lots of outdoor time is needed for this little guy. He is busy, he is active, and he needs to run, climb, jump, roll, the works, and lots of it. Making sure there's no screens before bed, but there is active play, like a bit of rough and tumble, rolling around, that kind of play before bed as well, just to get rid of any residual energy he's holding on to. He's a busy, active little guy and his life needs to mirror that. Yeah. But he does need boundaries.
Yeah. Should they say anything to the grandparents about the old wooden stick and all that kind of stuff?
I mean, it's said and then it's, you know, it's emphasized that they are loving and caring, but this is part of their caregiving strategies. I think that's a very personal choice. If you're asking, would I say it? Absolutely, I would.
Mm.
But then I would feel quite strongly about it. If you're saying, I'm okay with it, then that's for them. But again, hold in mind, your child is getting two very different responses to same behavior, two very different sets of messages. And that's a very confusing thing to ask a four-year-old to deal with. So if you can, I would. But also they're going to look at you and say, sorry, he's running around your house at 10 o'clock. We're not taking parenting advice from you. Yeah. So you can share what you're doing. You know, this is what we're doing. This is what we're finding works. We really want to do this in a consistent way. And I'm sure that's a once in a while thing. But, you know, this, we'd love if we could all be doing the same thing. So he's getting the same message. It's definitely in his interest to get the same message.
Yeah.
The great thing about Atlas Butler is they do it all. Heating, cooling, plumbing. Look, I'm busy with work. I don't have time to wait around or deal with lots of people. One company, one call, and they do it all. Wonder if they'll clean out my inbox. Seriously, offer that service. Please.
Atlas Butler is at your service. Call 1-800-FURNACE.
My 8-year-old daughter has started biting her nails excessively over the past few months. It's gone from the occasional nibble to constantly biting them very short and sometimes even picking at the skin around them. I'm worried there may be something deeper going on emotionally or psychologically. She hasn't gone through any major changes recently, but I know habits like this can sometimes be linked to anxiety or stress. We've tried reminding her to stop, but that usually just makes her frustrated or embarrassed. What's the best way to help without making the habit worse?
Yeah, it's a funny one and it becomes a habit very quickly. But the risk is, it's not just, you know, is she anxious? There is also the risk of bacteria getting into the nail bed or, you know, what's on her fingers going into her mouth and just biting her skin, leaving it quite raw and sore. So I would actually respond to this with nurture first. I would get a small basin of warm water with a nice soap in it, and I would soak her hands and have nice lotion and a little bit of cuticle oil to rub into her fingers, a soft towel. I'd make it like a little mini manicure kind of setup, but really what you're doing is a lot of nurturing touch. And so you're soothing her fingers rather than don't bite them, remember not to bite them, and keep talking about the behavior itself. But while you're doing that and she's calming with you, then show curiosity. I wonder, this only started a few weeks ago or whenever it did. And I wonder, you know, is there anything going on? And I wonder and I wonder and I wonder. You're curious and you're wondering, because wondering enables her to go deeper because she may not be consciously aware. So she's, I don't know, actually, maybe. Because even though there's nothing major that parents have picked up on, small little things could be going on. We're coming to the end of this. She's in primary school. We're coming towards the end of the year. The structure in school relaxes a little bit at this time of year. You know, if anybody isn't returning next year, now is the time they start making those announcements. I won't be back at school next year. Coming up to changing teacher, moving up a class, impending change, any of that, while not major things and their typical transitional experiences, but they could be enough just to unsettle her a bit.
Yeah.
So, you know, and also just look, is there a pattern to when she does this? Like, is there a time that you can say it's when she's tired, it's when she's thinking about something or ruminating on something, it's specifically when she's watching TV? Is there a pattern you can identify? Because then you can be more mindful of it. And rather than telling her to stop biting her fingers when you see her doing it, try come up with some random task you need her to do that involves her hands so that she has to stop biting them to do something with you.
Yeah.
And it could be helping out with dinner prep. It could be finding something in the press. It could be putting something away. Just get her to do something because it will break whatever thought pattern she's in and it will naturally cause her to stop biting her fingers. But I would otherwise respond with lots of nurture and comforting the sore fingers with lotion and just letting her know that you'll take care of her.
Yeah. Is it necessarily linked, though, to any kind of form of anxiety?
It can just be a habit.
Just a habit.
And it can sometimes be in times where their mind is wandering off and they're, you know, thinking about something or, you know, in that state where you're a bit zoned out and you're watching, and you're not even mindfully aware that you're doing it.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily, it's often stress and anxiety prompted, but I wouldn't say there must be a stress, must find it, but do come at it with curiosity and say how you'd like to take care of her fingers and make sure that they're not sore and make sure no infection gets in there and that your role is to nurture and soothe rather than to scold and to dissuade her, you know, and hope that that will naturally come, because the more cream and stuff you put on it and take care of it, you're also bringing it to her awareness about taking care of her hands.
Yeah, because you often see 8-year-old boys with like their finger up their nose permanently. So
no habits. No one
says they're anxious, you know.
Well, but they do say stop doing it, take your hand out of your nose. No, you're absolutely right. Yeah.
Yeah. My 10-year-old daughter has an obsession with taking up new hobbies and then quits them a few weeks later. She has done this with everything: football, camogie, violin, piano, and her latest one, horse riding. When she told us she wanted to try horse riding, we were very conscious that it's an expensive hobby. So we gave it 7 months before we bought the gear, boots, Jodhpur's helmet, etc. Now that we've bought all those things and paid for another 10-week summer camp course over the summer, she's saying she doesn't want to go and she doesn't like it anymore. We have 3 younger daughters, and as she is the eldest child, we don't want to set a precedent. I have told her she needs to complete the summer course, as we paid over €500 for it. She's very upset. We don't know what to do. The Equine Centre has said the course is non-refundable. Is it wrong to make her go?
No.
Yeah.
You can make her go.
Mm.
I think this is one of those things where you look at, you know, you're like, we don't know what to do. You do. You've done it. You've told her she has to go, but she's upset and you don't want her upset. That's quite different. Mm. I mean, you've spent €500 on a 10-week course. Like, that's quite a commitment.
Yeah.
Not just financially, but time-wise as well. And she has made that commitment. And I think it is important, like, she's 10 years old, that our children know when you make a commitment, you do see it through. And you can say to her, we won't be enrolling you in the autumn term, you know, when that comes around, if you don't want to go, and I'll be selling all this gear. And, you know, equally, if you can beg and borrow for the summer, sell the gear now straight away, and you will sell it on, there would be a good secondhand market for all of that, because lots of parents don't want to get burned on the expense of all those items. But I just think there's beyond that. I mean, I would have her do the course if you've paid for it and it's non-refundable. You know, I think I'm curious, though, why after 7 months of going happily, did she suddenly go, I don't like it? That's quite a jump. And it wasn't after 3 weeks or 4 weeks. Like, 7 months is a significant amount of time to do something, you know, weekly, and to be really invested and to see and allow you buy the gear. And I'm sure you did the whole warning, I'm buying this now, so you better stick at it, and all of those things. So just again, with curiosity, wondering, did anything happen? I don't think necessarily there may have been a row or anything, because sometimes after 7 months in an activity, maybe it's gone a bit same for her. Maybe it's not challenging for her anymore if she's mastered a lot of the tasks at the level she's at. So it might be worth calling the stables and speaking with her coach down there and saying, look, how is she getting on? You know, and they might say, look, she's actually really good and she's off lead and she's doing whatever it is. So we can increase her challenge, move her up a group. It could be something as simple as that.
Yeah.
That just making it a bit harder. I'm also going to make an assumption that in the summer program, it's not just the lesson, but they'll be doing a bit of horse care, mucking out, a few things like that. That might also be why she doesn't want to do the course in the summer.
Well, maybe what she's doing during the school term is, you know, they're teaching them the skills, but maybe a summer course is like they're assuming there are novices there as well, and she's learning the stuff she knows already.
Yeah, but that's also to be really mindful of that and talk to the stables about that, because if that's true, then that is too basic for her.
Yeah.
And, you know, if that isn't how it was explained to you, you might have a case for getting your money back on that. If, you know, but if they're saying, no, we can put her into a intermediate level and there will be plenty of challenge for her, then tell her that there will be new things. I also think that with kids who start lots of things and drop them, and she's quite a pattern here of doing that, often it's the excitement of the novelty factor at the beginning that really holds their attention. And, you know, this fantasy of, ooh, I'm going to horse ride, and seeing myself at the Olympics straight away, but realizing, actually, no, it's really basic and you've got to spend a lot of time getting the skills mastered. That's not as exciting as the fantasy I had. So, I'm not going to do it. If I can't be a concert violinist, I'm not going to squeak and squawk my way through more than one term of it. So I think, again, not in a punitive way, but just sitting down with her and saying, look, ahead of the autumn, you've tried out all of these things. Let's score them out of 10, what you liked and reasons why, and get you to think about, oh, so actually the things that don't score 10 but score higher than anything else are sport related. So maybe you need to have a sport activity that you keep up. And you're asking her to choose one, maximum two, but one to two things that she, but being very clear, when you sign up, you will be seeing this out for the year, the term, the season, whatever it is, because you'll be making a commitment to us, the club, yourself, and to see it out. I just think that task completion bit is important when you're 10 years old. Younger kids always try out, pick up and drop things, and you have to throw a lot of mud at the wall to see what sticks. But at 10, she needs to be settling into something that is her thing and not just moving through things this quickly.
My daughter started junior infants this year, and since then she's become an extremely picky eater. Before school, she was generally a good eater, but now getting her to eat dinner has become a nightly battle. Our approach has been that she doesn't get treats or yogurts unless she eats at least most of her dinner. Some nights she refuses completely and ends up going to bed hungry. My sister thinks this is far too harsh and says it could damage her relationship with food, which has really upset me. At the same time, I feel like if we give in and give her yogurts and treats instead, we're treating her, we're teaching her that she can refuse proper meals and still get what she wants. She does seem to understand the boundary we're setting, but I'm worried we may be handling this the wrong way. Is this a harmful approach, or is it reasonable to set these kids some kinds of food boundaries?
I mean, I've been talking about boundaries now all along, but here I'm going to say something a little bit different. I would avoid anything that makes food a battleground.
Yeah.
I would avoid placing emotional charge on food or meal times. And I would avoid things like bribing her. If you eat this, then you get a treat. I think we put a hierarchy on food when we do that. Like, we never say, if you eat your dinner, you can have more broccoli. It's like you can have a yogurt or a chocolate or, you know, so we do teach children there is a value on food and that it differs. So I would avoid doing that. I would avoid incentivizing behavior with treats or anything in that way. I would have her sit with you all at the table, and you can put her little plate of food, or if they're serving themselves from food on the table, have her sit there and say, I hear you, you don't want to eat it, but we all sit together as a family at dinner time. Because just by virtue of sitting there with some food on her plate and everybody chats, don't pay it any attention, she might eat something, she might start eating. Now, she might not, but either way, she's participating in family mealtime. She's not sent away or going away in a strop or a huff about it. The thing about food pickiness emerging seemingly suddenly around this age isn't that uncommon, because at 5 years old, you tend to see kids increase their need for independence. But they're still so dependent on grown-ups for everything, because they're only five. So where we see it is food, sleeping, toileting.
Yeah.
Everything to do with the body. because that is where they can exert control and independence. They can assert, I'm not going to do it and you can't make me. So that is quite developmentally typical at this time. But also hold in mind, there is a sensory change that can go on. So a lot of people listening will be like, yes, my child used to eat everything and then became very selective, if not picky, certainly selective about what they would eat. So little things like texture sensitivities, smells, not liking things. They're exposed to a lot more in other kids' lunchbox or perhaps the hot meals if that's in your school. So it might be something around that. I'm just not going to do it. But again, at five, the rate of growth does somewhat slow down. So they don't often need the same amount of food as they did. So sometimes people confuse a decrease in appetite with, oh my goodness, there's something wrong and they're fussy eaters. Just be mindful of all of that before we kind of psychopathologize what she's doing it here. What I would say is give control choices, you know, so that you're not saying, are you going to eat this? You're saying, do you want carrots or broccoli with your dinner? Okay, and you're plating it up for her. You could also give her that choice and say, shall I serve your plate or would you like to get the spoon and do it yourself? Involving her in food prep if you can, so she's part of it and you can announce to everybody that she helped make the dinner and everybody can say thank you to her. But always have one food that you know she will eat. It doesn't have to be her favorite food. Nobody should get their favorite food every day of the week. That's just not life. But there should be something on her plate that you are supremely confident, I know she likes that. I know she could eat that, even if it's her mashed potato and you keep it away from everything else on the plate. You know,
very important that
it is
can't
very
touch.
Important. Yeah. But if you know, I know she eats buttery mash and there is buttery mash on her plate, then at least she has something she can eat.
Yeah.
So you want to avoid it there. Now, if she's losing weight, if she's cutting out entire food groups, like all meats, all veg, something like that, if she was gagging or retching at the sight or smell of food, if she became very anxious about food, I would refer her to a registered pediatric dietitian, potentially a child psychotherapist or psychologist in that area as well. But I would be referring on if it was reaching that level. But it doesn't sound like it's there. And instead, I would try and do this in a way that empowers her. So you're giving her some semblance of control so she doesn't need to battle food as independence seeking.
And the treat after the dinner, should she get that? If she has a mouthful of her favourite food and then goes, there you go.
I think if you're serving dessert after dinner, then you're serving dessert after dinner. I don't think kids should have to earn that.
Yeah.
Because I think immediately you are putting a value on that. And you're
But that's if everybody else is having the same.
Absolutely. Yeah. If there is no treat after dinner in general, then no, why would you give her a treat? But then again, it's what you consider a treat. I don't know that I consider a yogurt a treat. I think you could, it depends on the yogurt, of course, but I think you could, you know, say there's yogurt before bed. She doesn't need to go to bed hungry.
Yeah,
I think you're just this is becoming something that's emotionally charged. And I think a 5-year-old who is digging her heels in and saying, I can really battle you on this, I would try and take the steam out of that, take the power out of that straight away.
Joanna Fortune, thanks a million as ever.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.